Opinions expressed in the following program are those of the producer and not necessarily those of WKTV Community Media.
Family-owned Palermo Pizza underwrites this episode of Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters Paranormal Podcast, located at 901 Gazan Parkway, Southwest Wyoming, and available at 616-531-8300.
In fair facade, he hearkens to the shallowness of men. Quaint his dance, his earthly prance. Should others envy him? While reveling in his glorious state, he hears a distant sound, hollow and elusive. Steps appear upon the ground. He took flight to his castle grand to find a safe retreat, yet found no solace in the night, as moaning robbed his sleep. The wailing of the banshee's cry had pierced his soul with fear. The creeping footsteps through the woods were ever growing near. A distant grave was calling for the claiming of its own. The Reaper grim would soon appear and take him to his home. Brought to you by WKTV. I'm your ghost hunting host, Wayne Preston Curtis Thomas. Welcome to another episode of Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters Paranormal Podcast. As always, we ask that you please keep an open mind about things that you might not easily believe as we explore the mysterious. Well, it's a ghost hunting show, real simple here, and our featured guest has 25 years experience as a paranormal investigator. We'll meet Chris Bailey from Grimstone in just a minute, but first let's check in with my co-host, a former Ghostbuster from Holland, Michigan.
Hi everybody, I'm Kim Colleen, and I'd like to welcome all of our new viewers, especially a new viewer named Kevin, who came and seen me this week and asked me specifically, have you seen any ghosts lately?
Oh, no.
And I said, no. He goes, well, do you believe in them? I said, yeah, I've seen my first ghost, you know, when I was a small child. And he's like, how can you prove to me that ghosts exist? So maybe we can talk about that tonight. And Kevin, this is for you.
Great. And a former ghost hunter, paranormal investigator, zooming in from Byron Center, Brandon.
Yeah, I'm still an active paranormal investigator, just kind of doing things kind of on my own. I did want to make an announcement. I did change the YouTube channel because I do plan on making other shows, but if I can get it out of the way here. Jose Paranormal Productions. That's the name of my YouTube page now, but is the YouTube home of the Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters podcast. So if you search Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters, you'll be able to find the channel that way.
Yeah, we'll go over that again later in the show when we talk about ongoing upcoming stuff. And then zooming from Warren, Michigan, like I say, 25 years experience. Please welcome to the show, Chris Bailey of Grimstone Incorporated.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Like to think of it as 25 years young experience. So
yeah. I know you must have started as a kindergartner.
Not quite that young, but always had an interest in the paranormal and had some experiences like many people who investigate as a young kid. And you know, that curiosity caused us to go deeper.
That's interesting, Chris, because so many of us did get an early start. Either people grew up in a haunted house, or like my grandfather was a ghost hunter. So they have a lot of early experiences that seems to stick with them. Tell us more about yourself and your team, Grimstone Incorporated.
Well, as you know, you mentioned, we're celebrating our 25th anniversary this year. We started off as a very small team of four individuals back in 96. mainly a couple friends that were interested in ghosts and a couple friends that were interested in history and loved historical places. So we thought, well, geez, what if we went to historical places and looked for ghosts? And that's where it started from. Since then, we've grown considerably. Right now, we have approximately 13 members in the organization. We've had as many as 30 at times. As you know, the paranormal interest ebbs and flows, and we're scattered all throughout Michigan. And we try to cover all of Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, and the Great Lakes region as needed. So we're a little bit different than some of the organizations out there. We don't have a book. We don't really want a book or a TV show. We're mainly focused on being able to go in, help clients understand what they have, and try to help them manage it. And focusing in more on what science or what evidence can we collect and utilize to really get an understanding of what's occurring here. Because whether you believe in ghosts or not, if you look through all of our written history and even into hieroglyphics and predates written language, there's always been this oral tradition, there's always this communication of ghost stories and things that go bump in the night from generation to generation, from culture to culture. So there's something there, and we're trying to get some numbers around it, some science around it, and hopefully bring some more understanding to the whole situation.
Yeah, I think you are different in that you have these different chapters. You say now you're in Warren, and then you have another, is Lansing another main?
We do have a few individuals out of the Lansing area that does do investigations. We're more focused right now, more so than working as individual chapters, but just keeping the organization running together, covering each other as much as possible, especially during the pandemic situation. Obviously, I'm sure you're aware COVID-19 has definitely changed the way so many businesses and personal, you know, getting out and doing things. It's definitely played a change in our way that we ghost hunt and investigate and how we do what we do.
Well, that's why we're Zooming.
Yes.
We normally invite people over to the TV studio and do shows here. That's a little difficult for somebody like you that lives all the way across the state, but we do have people that come from Detroit, from the Upper Peninsula, whatever. They come long distances to be on the show, but now we're Zooming everything. I'm wondering, has it changed you? Do you focus on like families, or do you go to commercial properties also?
For our work, we primarily worked with private homes and businesses. More so than some of these, you know, larger public or private hunts that people can sign up for, you know, the different haunted locations that allow you to rent the places for the night. Right. We try to, you know, to work with these individuals who have enough disturbing from the dead that they don't need additional troubles from the living, and work with them very discreetly and privately. To understand exactly what's going on with their property or what they're encountering, you know, as individuals, and getting them the appropriate help that they need. So, you know, we're not looking to publish their information. We're just looking to provide them with some peace of mind. At the same token, us being able to collect more research data and more information about, you know, these types of hauntings or other events, and trying to, you know, determine what is going on. Is there patterns to the things that go bump in the night, and so forth.
Right. It's interesting the way you worded that, because when Brandon and I were doing it together, we never charged anybody because they had enough problems already. You use that word burden. They didn't need another burden. They didn't need a financial burden on top of their problems. You know, they were concerned with their children. And yeah, I like that's what you focus on. Now, when I read your mission statement, I seen that you were focusing on information and you want to make sure that you're documenting the real thing. You also talked about continued improvements and an educational program. Do you offer any sort of education?
Yes, we do. We work with public libraries and other services, civic centers and so forth. And we do have a variety of presentations and informational lectures and things that we offer them for free of charge to help give people more aware of those situations. And in the past, we've actually have taught courses on things like introduction to ghost hunting. Not that we provide in any means certification. As you know, there's no certification for this. But we want people to be aware of that there can be methodology behind it. There can be processes to go through and good techniques and bad techniques. And through 25 years of doing this, we have seen our share of both. And if someone wants to go out and have their own experiences and do their own investigation, that's great. But at the end, if we can help them look back at what they've collected in a meaningful way, in a relevant way, because not everything that we grab out in the world under first impressions we might think is paranormal doesn't turn out to be. I know when very early on when I was ghost hunting, I learned a little bit from cemeteries and going out there at night. And, you know, at that time it was the trusty 35 millimeter camera, maybe your Polaroid, a digital cassette recorder, and you know, some that your handy dandy flashlight. And I got a wonderful picture of these weird orb streaks things on a Polaroid picture. And I was like, this is really cool. But when I started looking at it and taking it apart and adjusting contrast and filters by running it through some very old photo editing software, I realized that it was my watch face causing a reflection. And suddenly it wasn't as exciting anymore.
So, do you have a piece of equipment right now that is like your go-to, like it's your tried and true piece of equipment that you work with?
There's a few different things that we utilize. I'm a chemist by trade, a scientist, and I do a lot of electrical work too on our own. So we have a series of audio and video cameras, the surveillance systems that we've incorporated and essentially put into like an all-in-one unit that we can essentially drop off and within, instead of hours setting up, a couple minutes, have an entire location wired for sound and video and trying and basic sensors. We also have some environmental sensors that send remote data back to our computers so we can monitor a variety of different rooms all simultaneously in real time. So we try to collect as much environmental data and a much video and audio data as possible. Simply because, you know, we're trying to record a potentially invisible house guest that may or may not want to cooperate. And that's if everything's on the up and up. Sometimes we simply go there with our tools, environmental sensors, and other data and find out that there's perfectly natural reasons for what's occurring. Often more times than not. And sometimes there's a little bit more dubious reasons why things are occurring, especially since ghost hunting has been popularized by a lot of the TV shows and whatnot. Mm-hmm. We've been called out for people's entertainment purposes when they don't really have something, or we've been called out to businesses in which they wanted to generate more customer base and felt that if they could advertise it as a haunted location, it would help their clientele. They just weren't expecting us to have a camera that showed them flipping on and off light switches trying to scare us.
Whoops.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah. We ran into that through the years. You know, so important thing that you said was set up. The first team I was on, it took us 45 minutes to run wires to a central location so we could watch the monitor the whole building on one screen. And then it took us a half an hour when we were done to tear down. So, I mean, that's just wasted time. And I would start recording while we were setting up, of course. And then you're contaminating your evidence because people are talking and shuffling stuff around. But yeah, there's something to be said for that. If you can set up that quickly and record as efficiently as what you described, that's an important thing.
Well, we don't like to be obtrusive, but on the same side, if we're trying to collect evidence that there's something additional in someone's home or business that might not be welcomed there by the property owners, we realize that their time is precious, our time is precious, and the amount that we have on site can be limited. You know, oftentimes these are families that have children. So, and typically they take the children out of the house during that time. So they're going to want to come back, have bedtimes and other things. We want to work around their schedule. And sometimes that window is rather short to really collect a lot of evidence and a lot of data. So anything that we can do to efficiently set up equipment or do things differently, to speed up that process so we can focus more on collecting the data, analyzing the data, than running cords or, you know, spending a lot of time wheeling things out and putting things away in proper placements. So we do a lot of custom fabrication of our own stuff now at this point to help speed that along. So for example, our multiplexer video camera system right now is essentially a briefcase that we have plug-in ports along the side that are all pre-powered, pre-wired, that we can just snap things in extremely quickly and just go. And the monitor and the audio equipment plugins and everything are all inside the box. So,
wow. Yeah, nice. Well, that shows what experience does
for
how you have changed, you know, through the
years. I'm too old to waste time at this point.
Right. And then I don't know if there's such thing as a typical process that you go through. Like, how many hours on average would you say are you at a location?
Actually, at a location, it can really vary. For some of the, you know, for the some of the more legitimate cases that there is severe hauntings or symptoms going on, it could be multiple times of, you know, paying a visit and, you know, multiple hours during that time. But really a lot of our work begins before we even step into their door. We'll have a series of client interviews, phone consultation. We want to get as much information up front so that when we do visit them, it's not a slow process of walking us through each of the individual things. We know approximately, you know, what's the size of the property we have to deal with, what's the kind of resources we need to handle. And we go in there with a plan tailored to the customer and the property so we can, you know, be as efficient for them as possible and not waste any of their time.
Sure. I figure you know the hot spots. And then I actually worked with you, or we worked together back in 2012, 9 years ago. You came to Belding and worked on a case with us. And I noticed that your crew, they seemed to have like each individual had its own thing that they did. One guy took hand notes through the whole night. He wrote out hand notes on everything. Yeah. And then also you mentioned an orb, but one of your members saw an orb, not with the camera, but with their naked eye at this location that we were at. I was at that location the week before. And then we're friends, I think, with our team leader at the time.
Mark Kruger, who was one of our chapter directors at that time, was a friend of his. And I knew him, you know, a bit from in and out emails and so forth. But, you know, we were very glad to help, you know, we're always happy to help other organizations and other groups and work together on projects.
Do you still do that? You work with other teams on occasion?
If we can, we certainly will. You know, we've been, as I mentioned, around a long time. We've collected all the toys, as some people put it. And we're very fortunate on some of our equipment and so forth. So that if there's smaller organizations that need some assistance when, they get the place that they were hoping to investigate that might be large or much more than they could easily handle, we're always happy to work with other teams. And it's a way for us to learn new things too. And everyone has something new that they bring to the table. And it's always great collaborating with others.
I was so new back in 2012. I was so new at it. And it's like, I was quizzing you because I knew you had, at that time, you had been doing it for about 16 years, it seems like.
Wow.
And so I wanted to learn from someone that knew what they're doing. So I was asking you, like, what's the best tool and different questions like that. But this case that we brought you in on was of serious nature. The family would not meet us at their home that they had just purchased. They weren't living in the house. So we had free reign of the house. They would not bring their children back to this house. We had to meet them down the street.
Yes.
Yeah. And if you remember, you probably don't remember, but I looked up the notes on it. Their 8-year-old son was seeing an apparition of a young boy who was burnt. Ooh. Crispy, burnt, charred from a fire. And Chris, what you don't know, that house burnt down since then.
Oh, wow.
So it might have been some kind of premonition that their son was having, the 8-year-old son.
Well, I hope they're okay.
Yeah. I mean, I ran into their grandpa and he told me, the house burnt down, but he didn't say there was, it wasn't tragic or anything. Mm-hmm. So apparently the boy was not seeing his own demise, hopefully, yes. But it could have been some kind of premonition. You don't know how the mind works.
That was a very complex case. There was a lot of parts there. Obviously that property had, the previous owner had left a number of different items and things there, some historical, but some also possible chemical and so forth. And we did have one member that did see, you mentioned an orb. I think of, when it's visible to the human eye, it's more of a spook light type thing, where I kind of reserve the name for orb for something like a dust reflection or particle. There was some recording of the cameras with it too, going in front and behind objects and things. So that was an interesting night.
Yeah.
We were glad to be a part of that.
One other thing that happened, and it was July, right around 4th of July. You were there, I think, on the 7th. And it was so hot and muggy. And then one of our team members got the cold spot. And I mean, she got goosebumps. And I could see them. And it was hot and muggy. And it was like, that was my first experience with seeing what a cold spot can actually do. A real cold spot. I mean, it was obvious. Yeah, she had raised goosebumps on her arm. Yeah, and I appreciate that. I appreciate you coming in and what I could learn from you at the time. But I also called you years later and said, Chris, I got something weird going on here. And Brandon can testify to this about the minions, the three cases that we had that were so similar. You want to speak on that, Brandon? Where there were
one. Yeah, we were kind of having cases of like short, like creature type of things. I'm not sure if they might have been some sort of an elemental spirit. So a lot of them, they were kind of like attacking, like people would feel them climbing over them. But they're three people that didn't know each other. Two of them were kind of in a similar area of Grand Rapids. One was more across town, but it was just very weird because like all three cases were within like the same month.
Right. So I called Chris up over in Warren. I go, Chris, I know you've been doing this for a long time. You ever hear of anything like this? And I think your response was something like, maybe they're crazy. I don't know. I'm going, no, wait a minute. There's three of them and they're different locations. So I mean, they're not doing drugs. They're not, if they are, they're doing all that. They're sharing them because they don't know each other. But yeah, I was just like, maybe it was going around. Maybe it was in the air. So that's why I called you, Chris.
No, and things like that, I find truly fascinating. And that's the kind of things that we look for, especially when there is a pattern or a group of individuals that don't know each other that start having similar type of occurrences. We did a fundraiser, many years back. This has to be about 15 years, maybe even longer, where we decided to try the, have a dinner at this supposed haunted location, and we'll do a tour after. And we had 64 people turn out, and we were very delighted to have them. And then we broke them up into small groups and individually walked them through. And out of the 64 people, I remember very distinctly, 47 came back after the end of the tour saying something happened to them. But what was weird was these individual groups, like 8 people, all had their hair pulled. They were like, I felt my hair pulled when I was in this room. And it was a separate groups coming along, sharing same occurrences. And when things like that happen, you have to stop and say, well, obviously they're not crazy. It's not a mental thing. It's not chemicals. It's something else going on there. And really it's those things that defy statistical odds. That is really what we need to start looking at and seeing and calculating, determining and paying more attention to. So at the time, never heard of anything like that other than a few small, encounters, but those are onesie twosies off, not a large group. And did you ever manage to find resolution for any of it?
Well, we didn't get a fourth case, so that was good. I mean, and they didn't call us back. And, the one guy had an exorcism like the year before. He was taking salt baths. And these people were so distraught. These minions were following them wherever they went in their vehicle. And we think it was like a location that could have been Native American burial ground that they dug up and built homes over and put the highway through. So that was kind of where we went with that. That would explain two of the locations. The third location, don't know how that was related to the other two. But I'm wondering, what was like the weirdest explanation you had to give somebody for like possible, they thought it was haunted, but you said come up with debunked it and said, you already gave one explanation that was a good one. Because we had one where we thought maybe the person had CTE, because they had several concussions. And so they were experiencing hallucinations and different things. So that was probably our strangest reason that we had ever given for haunting. What they were calling a haunting, we were just calling CTE. So what do you think? Have you had some really weird stuff where you had to tell them you are crazy?
It's strangely enough, homeowners don't ever want to be called crazy. but there's been encounters where there's certainly questionable things going on mentally, emotionally, psychologically in there. And in those encounters, we have had we do currently and have had in the past, people who have been trained, in psychology that can help us identify and work around those.
Oh, wow.
But probably the weirdest one happened very early on in our investigation practices. And we were contacted by a homeowner in Monroe that owned General Custard's family home. And wow. Yes, I mean, that as far as this was way before ghost hunting shows were out there, before, you know, there was a big interest in the paranormal. So the fact that we got an opportunity to investigate this, it was wonderful. And he was certain his home was haunted. He believed it was haunted by General Custard. He was also a reenactor of a historical reenactor, and he often would do historical reenactments for General Custard, and collected a number of historical artifacts that he had located all throughout the home. It was a wonderful opportunity, but as we started listening to the claims and going through and investigating, we quickly learned that there might be more natural causes to the things. And one of the largest was that people, especially on the main stairway of the home, especially his wife, would feel like they were being pushed down the stairway. They would often feel sick or have vertigo and have all kinds of issues around the stairway. So we did, we pulled out some highly technical equipment. It was a level, and we placed it on the stairs, and the stairs were all inclined forward. So as you're walking down them, there was that angle that you're gonna feel like you were gonna to fall down from them, because they were simply not leveled, and because of the age of the home, quite severely. Also, we went into, you know, behind the stairway and into the basement area, and they still had the original cloth wiring from that home. And it had a tremendous amount of EMF, electromagnetic fields running through those. There was no shielding really on any of that wiring at all. It was just, you know, clothed up as an insulator. And the numbers that we were collecting from that were very much equivalent to basically just having your head under one of the giant power line structures right off the grid, you know, continuously. So there is EMF sensitivity that can develop over time, where it can cause feelings of nausea and being sick. And we felt that this could be a solution first. While we didn't necessarily rule out that their home was haunted, we recommended to them that they should contact some electricians. We provided them with some lists in the area that might be able to help them, you know, and work on these things first and see if the symptoms still persist. And at that point, we no longer met the client's expectations. They were disappointed that, obviously, that we were telling them General Custard's most likely not in their home right now. And it was left at that.
Yeah. I'm kind of curious, as a part of your team, do you work with psychic mediums or anything like that? You sound like a very technical, scientific group. Do you have team members that kind of use psychic abilities during your investigations?
Oh, that's a great question.
Yeah, it is. I know. I wanted to ask that question. She comes up with the best questions.
We have worked with psychics in the past. We use them when we do work with them, sort of as a reference tool or a collaboration tool. If they get feelings or experiences or have communication and so forth, we're very glad for them to have that personal connection and so forth. We don't document that as evidence, but we may utilize it in such a way that if we have an extra camera or so forth, it wouldn't hurt to put it in the spot where she's been talking to Johnny, or, you know, he had this feeling or sensation.
Yeah, that was, you know, you brought up EHS, electromagnetic sensitivity, and 5% of people suffer from that hypersensitive to electrical magnetic fields. You don't want to live under power lines, stuff like that. We've had cases where the wind was blowing, and you talk about the insulation, the wires had bad insulation, old house. And when that wind was blowing, the whole house would, you couldn't put your meter on without it lighting up anywhere in the house. And I think that spirits can use that energy too. So even though, you know, we saw that and we told them about it, we thought maybe there was stuff going on in that house. I heard Brandon's name without any sort of device, just in the basement where she thought she was getting pushed down too. But yeah, I think that's a good one where it comes up a lot. It's a real world explanation of what can appear to be an haunting or things that happen sometimes when there's hauntings.
You know, we believe that there are certain things that defy normal explanation. Otherwise, we've been really wasting our time for 25 years.
Right.
Or we're the world's boringest people. I might be, I don't know. I can't speak for the rest of the team, but you know, the hunt and being able to collect the data and the research and gain a personal experience or two and learn about these things in a different way definitely keeps us going. And we often find, though, at least in our cases, that it's not exactly like what you see in television.
Yeah.
You know, not every place that you go to will you find the demonic presence. In fact, while we've been doing it, very, very, very rarely is it ever something super severe that's dangerous or harmful or of some type of paranormal, you know, extreme situation. More times than not, it's like having a invisible house guest. If it is something paranormal that these people are living with, then the person might be grouchy or, you know, it's not harmful. And more frequently than not, there's times where people may have had a legitimate paranormal occurrence, but it was a one-time event. But now they're on edge. They're sensitized to what's occurring. So if they hear scratching at night, it's no longer the tree that's rubbing up against the window, even though it's been doing that for years. It's now something that possibly is trying to communicate with them or cause them harm or cause them worry. So, you know, we try to go through and start separating those things. And in the case of Monroe, we found some serious issues that really for their house safety, they should probably correct. You know, the cloth style wiring is not up to code by any means for today's electrical standards. And if we can work with them to clear up those items and those natural occurrences, and we're still having other issues, and still we can keep peeling away the onion and try to get to the root and have the true understanding. But we got to get past that sensitivity. We got to get past those natural occurrences to really find what's real and what's occurring there.
I'm gathering that you are a believer.
Yes, absolutely.
And so why do you think there are ghosts? Why do ghosts haunt?
I mean, we can look at all the wonderful books and things out there that there is, you know, unfinished business that they don't know that, you know, they've passed on. Mm-hmm. But I think it's going to be broader than that. I don't think that everything we label as ghost is necessarily was once a human spirit. I don't even know some of the things that we find absolutely don't make any sense logically why these things would be occurring and seem to have a paranormal attributes and everything to it. But I couldn't tell you that it was someone's deceased grandmother. You know, there's a whole series of doors maybe opening or closing, other types of things that just shouldn't be happening. And we can see them happening. We see the physical interaction, but there's not that layer of communication. So I hate trying to put, you know, a pin on exactly why all these things are happening. And it seems to vary from case to case. I've given up trying to shoehorn everything into little boxes. Yeah. But rather work with the individuals that have the problems. And if it fits into one of our models for, you know, a residual haunting or an intelligent haunting or some type of phantom or a tulpa or unique thing, that's wonderful. But just to go in with an open mind and just symptomatically go through the list of what they're observing, what their issues are, and what could be possibly stemming it from. And
I was interested in how you broke it down, whether residual hauntings, intelligent haunting, maybe shadow people might be a third category, and then like dark things, like you mentioned, that the very rare of might be dark. There might be dark things, or might be just an angry ghost. He was a nasty person when he was alive. So now he's the same thing when he's dead. He hasn't changed any. So he's just whatever you are as a living person, you are as a dead person.
I'd like to think I improve with age, but it's not necessarily happens. So
right. Hopefully we mellow out. We live long enough. On X-Files last night, I think the important quote was, "We bury the dead alive." So, I mean, as ghost hunters, we know that there is something besides this physical thing of that makes up a person. There's the essence. And sometimes that essence doesn't move on for whatever reason. You listed some of them, unfinished business. A lot of times I would go into a house and the people would say, "Why me? Why this house? Why now am I being haunted?" And that's about as hard to answer as, you know, as that general question I ask you, you know, why ghost haunt?
And with the traditional ghost or paranormal situation, you know, it can be simply a connection to something, whether it's the person, the place, something in it. But then there's a whole string of other paranormal that people think could be someone that's deceased, and it's something else entirely all the different. And those are even more mysterious. I can't fathom why the person who's been living in their house for 10 years is absolutely fine. And then suddenly, you know, one day, you know, they're starting to get weird experiences on their property, and, you know, and other people are seeing it too and having these encounters. So
Do you do a
list? Could it be something that they've brought into the home recently that you would research, that
like,
you know,
antique?
We try to look at those things, and sometimes it's just not that clear.
Yeah.
You know, it
may have followed them too, not just, you know, something into the house.
Yeah, I think I've learned through the years that they didn't necessarily have to invite it in either. Mm-hmm. That there can be things that are like a curse that could be a family thing, some kind of an attachment like that. Yeah, because they always wonder, the questions are, you know, did you bring any antiques in recently? Have you been messing with a Ouija board, you know? But yes. I don't think you necessarily have to invite it in for it to be there. That's what I've kind of figured out through the years.
But those are much harder to diagnose, especially if it's something behind in the shadows, you know, causing whether it be a curse or some other thing. Not everybody knows what enemies they have or, you know, what could be placed upon them. And there's been times where we've gone into homes and we've come across, you know, markings and things carved into, you know, the outside of their home in a corner, or, you know, into one of their back walls.
You mean
or
like
something.
Somebody has done that to curse them?
Whether it's, you know, considered a type of magic or voodoo or other things, you know, we've had those type of unusual things. And there's been times where, you know, we've had a few experiences more into the occult side than the ghost or spirits.
And have you ever had anything get in you or in your members?
Normally, no. There's been a few times where people have definitely not felt themselves. We've had people get sick at locations. I was at one location. I was told, you know, when we were setting up, one of the members is like, "There's something wrong here, and, you know, I don't know if we can continue." And I said, "Well, let me go check it out. You know, don't tell me exactly what the problem is, but where do I go to find the problem?" And that they're like, "Well, down the hallway, and I started going down the hallway, and suddenly I felt like I was standing on a waterbed. The floor felt like it was moving underneath my feet, and I got really sick. And
wow.
I took two steps back, and suddenly I was okay again. And it wow. was probably one of the weirdest experiences I've had in my life, in paranormal investigating. It lasted, anytime someone approached that area for a few minutes, and then everything was fine.
Some kind of a portal or vortex?
It didn't seem to take me anywhere other than maybe possibly to my knees, but
yeah.
It definitely was, it definitely gave us a sick feeling just being in that area.
Brandon and
in multiple people.
Yes.
Yeah. Brandon and I have been on a floor like that. It happened to be the top floor at Mangiamo's, and it felt like you're at a fun house, or riding on a boat. It was like all of us, and it was all of us. We all felt the same thing. It was this entire third floor. Yeah, it was weird. And we got some weird readings. We got some voices there. I definitely think that place is haunted, but yeah, and it affected all of us at the same time. Like you say, like the floor was moving. It was really odd. Yeah, there's been some weird stuff, I tell you. I'm thinking 25 years, you've probably come across a whole lot of weirdness, stuff that you probably can't explain. Who do you call? I call you. Who do you call?
Well, luckily, number one, I have a very good group of diverse individuals that we all consult with each other. But, I've made a lot of paranormal friends throughout the community in this time, and a lot of wonderful groups throughout Michigan. So certainly when something is outside of our wheelhouse, and it does happen, it still happens today, we're very happy that we can, reach out to those individuals and talk to them. We've made friends with different ministers and priests in the past when it comes to religious type situations. There's been, a good handful of wonderful, talented individuals that have more experience in that whole mediumship or, psychic type connections information. We have a couple people that we work with that has an understanding more of voodoo and magic, and we can work with them when we can. So while I hate coining or using the word paranormal unity, being able to reach out and being cooperative with each other and sharing data and working together is so much better than making it a very competitive territorial type of thing.
Sure. Yeah. I noticed that about you. I mean, I have para unity on my list, but I already know that you were practicing para unity because you worked with Taunting Whispers back in 2012, and you're willing to listen to me when I called you and said, like there's some weird stuff going on. So I figured you were sort of into it, but I didn't know if you'd have actually made any moves towards it. We have a team over here, GRASP, that is trying to work together, and they've put some meetings together to form some para unity, try to get some standards in the industry. I'm thinking that's what you're seem to be very interested in, making sure that you got legitimate evidence, that you're not showing pictures of dust orbs or things like that. I really appreciate that, the effort that you're putting out and that you've put out through all these years. You haven't gotten burnt out on it, apparently. I mean, it seems like some of my friends got burnt out along the way, maybe myself even.
It can happen. I've had my moments where I've questioned whether do we keep going, and then something unique to happen and go, wow, oh, that was new. Yeah, let's keep going. And so, we've been very fortunate in that way, that plus being around such a great team, that's been all of our members at this point are at least 6 years plus with the group. And they're all so refreshing to talk with and share. We kind of bounce the excitement off each other. So it's good in that regards. But As far as paranormal unity goes and things of that nature, yeah, we've been really focused on trying to collect that data and work in the group mind. One of the things that we did probably about 12 years ago is we started a website database called paramap.com, which people could go and click on a state map of where they're at and add in their paranormal information for a certain place. Different symptoms amounts. You can even open it up and be as precise of giving EMF readings that you've experienced through these places, what you think it is. What it does is it allows then all the collaborative work there to be referenced by other individuals. You know, we don't look for private people's emails or not emails, but street addresses or things of that nature, but general locations. And with that map, you can switch the map views and you can pull up Indian burial grounds, like you've mentioned, and see if these properties line up with Indian burial grounds. Or there's, you know, been talks about certain minerals and things, beds like shale or quartz areas being higher in paranormal energy. Well, you can look and see based on USGS maps if there is certain minerals in the areas that might affect it. Or water zones or townsheds or just a variety of different data sets that you can pull up and compare your information to and other people's information to.
Nice. So, what a good resource that would be.
Yeah.
You know, I Googled your name or Grimstone. I thought Grimstone, that must be something related to Halloween or something spooky. I mean, where in the heck did you come up with that? Because I cannot find a definition. It has to do with a hamlet in a river. It's a geographical location. It's a confluence in the UK somewhere. So
it's been a few things. I think there's a comic strip now that's named Grimstone. I think there's a heavy metal band. I think I came across it one time.
Yes.
You know, when we started it, it just seemed like a name that fit the four of us going out, and we wanted to have something in our domain name, you know, to throw up so we could show some pictures and some of the things that we did and some of the historical places we've been. And it's just sort of stuck ever since.
Okay. Yeah. I couldn't find anything that really told me it was spooky, but so I had to come up with something for the intro. So I thought, well, Grim. There's the Brothers Grimm who are kind of dark with their nursery rhymes. But so I thought, well, Grim Reaper, because you're kind of assisting the Grim Reaper. You're helping to send the dead on their way. You are sort of a Grim Reaper.
I guess that's one way to look at it. I try not to think of it quite that dark, but, you know.
Well, you're doing good work. I appreciate it. We need to move on because we're kind of running out of time. So we do a shout out to our previous guest, and that was your friend, Kim.
Mm-hmm. Adele
Guidry, the Cajun Lady of Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And we talked a little bit of voodoo on our last podcast. And I always like to give a shout out to WKTV staff here. Had the big shot, Tom, had to set this meeting up because the guy who normally does it was on vacation. And then Kelly works with Brandon, and they get our stuff on televised. So this will be on TV on Comcast, Channel 25, and UVerse 99. I don't know if you get that in your area, Chris, but it'll be on. And I'll let you know when that's going to happen.
Thank you.
You want to do a shout out to anybody, Chris?
Just want to say thank you for, you know, allowing us to have 25 years of memories and experiences and being able to work with, you know, so many families and businesses. You know, we really appreciate having the opportunity to research and grow with everybody.
You're amazing team members. I would think a shout out to those guys.
Oh, absolutely. All of them are fantastic.
Sounds like it. And then upcoming ongoing events, you got anything, any events? You say sometimes you do public speaking and stuff.
This fall, we've taken it rather quiet. We do have a couple of library things that we're working out, but we still haven't finalized on it. We're just trying to adjust and get prepared for, you know, year 26.
Yeah. Here with COVID, I'm glad that you're still working with families, because I know some of these teams have kind of given up on that idea of going into people's homes, shaking their hands, all that thing. But I'm glad that you're still working at it. I applaud you for that. And then for us, Kim came up with our Facebook. So we got that thing loaded with all our different shows that we've done. Yep. And if we put stuff in there, we plug other people. If they have events coming up, we put that in there for them. Yep. And then Brandon's just started Jose's Paranormal History Production.
Productions. Yeah. I just started, I had it as Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters originally, but I wanted to produce some other show and other content. So I decided to make it to differentiate, but you can go on there. There is a Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters playlist. You can find all of our videos. I'm going to be doing some other content to be put up there. Like my shout outs to Rich Meyer of the Upper Peninsula Bigfoot Sasquatch Resource Organization for having us up there for a training session. So I'll be posting a little bit from there at sometime soon.
I don't know if you know those guys, but Jim Sherman from the Upper.
I know Jim.
Yeah, he follows you. I saw that. Yeah, he's one of your followers.
So, I follow him right back. We've actually had a few times when he's connected with us and actually trained some of our members for cryptozoology type, research work.
So that's when Brandon just got back from Bigfoot training. Yeah. Just got back from the UP.
Unfortunately, Jim couldn't make it. He made it the last year when we went out. But
I didn't know he wasn't there.
Yeah.
I guess he's pretty funny guy, pretty neat guy. So I'm hoping to talk to him before the year's over. We'll see. And then also, I mentioned the Comcast Channel 25 and U-verse 99. That's on Monday nights and Saturday nights. It comes on late. You can check the schedule on WKTV Journal for that. And then next month, we have 222 Paranormal, which apparently Brandon and Kim both have rubbed elbows with those guys. They do.
I've podcasted with them before.
Joe and Jen.
Yes.
Shortridge, they brother and sister do a podcast show. So they'll be on next month. And then Chitan Noir will finish the month out. Then for a final thought, this is for everybody to weigh in on. You think one ghost can control another ghost? Or can a demonic presence have control over ghosts? It's kind of two questions, but so let's just stick with can one ghost have control over another ghost? Brandon, you want to start on that one?
I would say yes, at least from the evidence that before we've gathered, because we've had it where like one spirit's trying to talk and the other one's going, no, shut up, don't talk, and is trying to keep the one from coming through and communicating with us. So that's something I've experienced a couple different times. So I would say there's definitely ones where they try to.
We've seen ghosts that were bullies.
Yeah.
Bullying the other. That's what we've seen. Kim, you want to weigh in on that at all?
Well, I hate to, I watch a lot of movies, right? So I don't know if this is right, but they always do that in the movies, right? Like the nun is controlling the old man's spirit, and causing havoc in the house and hurting the kids and stuff. But, I've only seen it in the movies, quite honestly. I have not experienced a bully ghost before. I've only experienced sort of like one ghost at a time.
Oh.
If you're doing something like EVP work or something like that, you're only hearing one, maybe there is two ghosts that you're hearing, but I don't know if they're actually bullying each other. So yeah, I can't really answer that because I haven't had the personal experience.
Yeah, you're more of a ghostbuster.
Yeah,
Kim would work with the kids. She'd go to the hospitals. As a ghostbuster. So she did that.
Changed a lot of lives with that program that I did.
Lucky for us, we have a person who's been doing this for 25 years. So
yeah.
Oh, no pressure. I'm open to the possibility. We've done recordings and things where we've picked up multiple voices communicating with each other. How much they can actually control or force, I don't know, but there's definitely been controlling, domineering personalities in life. So I can certainly see at least the attempt being done in the afterlife.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we have recordings, like you say, whether how much control they're actually one over another, we don't know. But like we're telling one ghost to touch this device. And what we hear is, Michael, touch it. So they don't want to touch it, but they're telling Michael to touch it. And at this location, it was always they wanted Michael to do these things. And we think Michael might have been a child ghost. And mm-hmm. so that mm-hmm. whether this was an adult ghost or a parent ghost domineering over the, I don't know, a relative, I don't know, but it seemed like it. So yes. Hard to say. But yeah, Brandon and I have come across that in EVPs at more than one time. So possibly, but it's hard to tell on something like that. So we always end with an inspirational thought. And this one here, I come up with a good one. Good one that I think describes Grimstone and describes Chris Bailey and your attitude through the years and what it took to get this far. This is by Pele. So Pele says, success is no accident. It is hard work, perseverance, learning, studying, sacrifice, and most of all, love for what you are doing. So I don't know if you love it. You must after 25 years.
I do.
It's taken hard work, perseverance, but you're doing it and you're still doing it. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being with us and sharing your knowledge too.
Happy to talk. Thank you.
Well, maybe we'll do it again sometime soon. I hope, because I think you got a lot more information. I have a whole list of things that I could have covered, but we kind of covered them as you went. You were answering those questions, and Kim was asking the questions too before I could. She's getting more psychic as we go along.
I don't know about that.
So I think you are, because of all the psychics and mediums that we
it's rubbing off on me.
Right. I think maybe the Cajun lady from Louisiana might have rubbed off on me.
Yeah. I don't know. She's probably got a voodoo doll of me right now.
Yeah. There've been a lot of synchronicities through the years. And I think this is kind of just another one just coming together like this. It's telling me that I'm on the right path and that we're on the right path. Eventually we will get there through perseverance and hard work. I really think so. But appreciate what you're doing. Chris, thanks so much. That's the show. Peace out.
Thank you.
At 901 Gazan Parkway, Southwest Wyoming, and available at 616-531-8300.
The opinions expressed in the preceding program are those of the producer and not necessarily those of WKTV Community Media.